Boker Tov, everybody. Welcome to the second of our week-long series on Hanukkah. And it's a pleasure today to welcome Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Leshem. And today's lecture is in conjunction with the National Library of Israel. And it's also, we want to thank Arnie and Faye Niederhofer for their sponsorship. Wishing a refuah shlema to all who are ill and to say thank you to us at Torah Motions. So thank you, Arnie and Faye. Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Leshem is the director of the Gershom Shalom Collection for Research in Kabbalah and Chassidut at the National Library of Israel in Jerusalem. He received a BA at Columbia University, a BA in Talmud from the Jewish Theological Seminary, made Aliyah in 1979, studied in Yeshivat HaMiftar, as I think you heard, and received smicha from the Israeli chief rabbinate in 1988. He's taught over the years, served as a community rabbi, and wrote his PhD on Chassidut, and since 2011, he served as director of the Gershom Shalom Collection. As I mentioned, he's a contributor to the Encyclopedia Hebraica, and he lives in Yerushalayim with his wife, children, and grandchildren, and it's a pleasure to welcome him for the first time to Torah in Motion. And I want to thank DJ, you know, Schneeweiss, who works at the National Library, who sort of organized this, and we had the pleasure, DJ lived and I lived five doors apart from each other when he served as the Council General for Israel for Ontario and Western Canada. And it's nice to connect with our old neighbors and friends. Bakasha, Dr. Rabbi Leshem.
Shalom to everyone. Erev Tov, or here in Israel, it's Erev Tov for you. Good morning. I'd like to thank Rabbi Kelman, first of all, for inviting me. This is my first opportunity, as he mentioned, to teach in Torah in Motion. It's very exciting for me. I'd like to thank Torah in Motion, Rabbi Kelman, and also the National Library and DJ for helping make this shidduch. As was pointed out, I'm Tzvi Leshem, and I have the privilege of directing the Gershom Shalom Collection for Kabbalah and Chassidut at the National Library of Israel, which is a very special privilege. The National Library of Israel is the equivalent of a Library of Congress, or I guess in Canada, the National Library of Canada, or the British Library. And we have a lot of amazing special collections. And one of them that I'm privileged to work in and direct is the Gershom Shalom Collection, which is the world's greatest single collection of books and materials on Kabbalah and Hasidism and Jewish mysticism in the world, with over 35,000 items, including thousands of rare items in this field. And it's a real center for research in that area for scholars from all over the world. So we're very, very fortunate to be part of that. The National Library itself, in the last little over 10 years, has been going through a major renewal process, which involves both maintaining ourselves as the leading library for Jewish scholarship in the world, but at the same time opening our doors more to a wide variety of cultural and educational activities as befitting a national library, not only a university academic library. And this will culminate, Bezrat Hashem, when we move to our new building in a little over a year near the Knesset, and then we'll be in the proper place for the all the kind of activities that we're doing already. Well, we're doing until recently for obvious reasons. And now we're doing mostly by Zoom. But as I said, it's a very special place, and I'm very happy to be here. So now let's learn a little Torah. Hanukkah is obviously in many ways associated almost more than any other holiday with the as the Chag HaNisim. We sing Al HaNisim, of course, not only as well on Purim as well, but and some people have instituted it also for Yom HaTzmud and Yom Yerushalayim, but that hasn't caught on yet. But certainly Hanukkah is a day very much associated with Nisim, and it even has within it the tension between two kinds of miracles, the hidden natural miracle of the military victory over the Greeks and the supernatural miracle of the Nes Pach HaShemen, of the oil that was used to light the menorah on the Beit HaMikdash. And there's a lot of interesting one could almost say, even say tensions or certainly interesting relationship between those two miracles, which I'll really only get into at the end of the shiur. I want to zoom out for a while and learn a number of sources about miracles, which is, of course, an enormous, enormous topic. But just touch on a few that I think are going to help us when we, in the end, zoom back into Hanukkah, I'll help put things into a kind of, hopefully, a new perspective. So with your permission, I'm going to share the source sheet, and we'll, there we go. Is that it? That's it. Okay. And I'll read in Hebrew, but I'll translate everything into English as I go along, okay? I'm actually going to both start and end with the Maharal of Prague, who's one of my favorite Jewish thinkers of all times, who lived in the end of the 16th and early 17th centuries, and was a very prolific writer, and many of his writings were lost as well. In his book, Gvurot Hashem, which is really about Yitziat Mitzrayim and Chag HaPesach, he has several introductions, several hakdamot, and in the second one, he relates to the concept of miracles and the proper way for us to understand miracles. I went too far. All right. Okay, so the Maharal says the following. Kemo sheyesh la'olam hateva seder misudar noheg al pi tivo, the same way that the natural world runs according to an order. Nature is run by an order of the laws of nature. Okay, that everyone would agree with, I think, that nature is that's the way God organized the world. Okay, but now he adds his chidush, his new idea. Kach yesh l'nisim seder gam kein. Miracles as well have an order to them. Now, this is counterintuitive. I think for most of us, we tend to think of nisim as miracles as the sort of the bizarre aberration that trumps nature. Normally things go according to some kind of normal plan. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and then you don't expect it to just stop in the middle and wait for Yoshua, for example, to win a military victory. We see that as a complete aberration and not as any kind of orderly plan. And yet the Maharal is going to develop this idea that miracles are also go according to a very specific order. So let's go on. He says, "Ki anisim ba'olam, b'meshesh la'olam kishur v'chibur v'itachdut im ha'olam ha'nivdal, yesh lezeh seder misudar, ki ein ha'dibuka hu rak b'seder misudar." The moral summary sounds a little bit wordy, but we'll unpack what he's saying here. Says there are miracles in the world, in this world, the physical world, Olam HaZeh, that we live in. And why is that? It's because this world is connected to and ultimately united with what he calls Olam HaNivdal, literally the separated world. But you have to note that in the Maharal, there's a lot of his own terminology. And the word Nivdal in the Maharal, which means separated, always means separated from physicality. Or in other words, Nivdal for the Maharal is a code word for what we would use the word ruhani, spiritual. Okay, so since our physical world is connected with the parallel spiritual world, therefore in our world there's an order of nature. In the upper world there's an order that's more miraculous, but it meets down here as well. It says, and this has an order, because the fact that we're connected between these two worlds is not, of course, accidental. It's the way Hashem planned the world. And the same way that there's an order here, there's an order above. And so when the two worlds meet through a miracle, so to speak, that's also an orderly process. He'll explain more. Mipnei zeh lo yitchadshu nisim rak bezman min hazmanim veinam tmidim. But because miracles essentially come from the upper world, the spiritual world, therefore they don't happen all the time. They only happen occasionally. Now, of course, one could argue, and I don't remember, someone makes this argument, but I think it's just sort of everyone says it, but it's obviously true, that to a real extent, nature is all miraculous. We know that the Ramban already stated that the gematria, the numerical equivalent of the word of the name of God, Elohim, equals hateva, the nature. Because nature is a hidden manifestation of God's presence in the world. So in that sense, all of nature is also miraculous. But since nature goes according to an orderly pattern, we get used to it and it stops seeming miraculous to us. It starts to seem natural. But that's also not really true. But and nonetheless, says the Maharal, miracles don't happen all the time. The Kasher Natan Hashem Yitbarach Haman Yisrael, for example, when God gave us the manna in the desert. Al tomar klal shelo yazeh beseder harui b'mitziut. Don't think that that was just a bizarre aberration to have bread falling from the sky. Okay? No. Haya seder olam az yotzei chutz l'mitziut asher ra'ui she'eh noheg. Don't think that the world left its proper order at that time. That's not the case. Ki k'shem sh'ra'ui la'olam liyot noheg al pi tiv'o ve'han hagato, kach ru'i li'Yisrael b'meshem divukim bo'olam ha'nivdal shi'u lahem nisim misudarim. The same way the physical world is connected to a physical order of nature, Am Yisrael, the Jewish people who the Maharal is proposing is kind of a supernatural sort of people, that we are very deeply connected with the spiritual world. Therefore, it's not surprising that part of the way that God rules our aspect of history is through miracles. And they're miracles that are arranged properly and appropriately. They're not haphazard. V'nei yesh l'nisim seder misudar min Hashem itbarach. The miracles are all orderly. Vein devar min ha'nisim yikra shinui b'nivraim, and they are also not any change in the creation. Okay, again, we would think in the 6 days of creation, God created all the laws of nature, and then everything happens, follows like that, you know, for the rest of history. And then again, once in a while, something really bizarre happens, which we call a miracle, that breaks down the order. But the Maharal says, no, there's two parallel orders. There's the natural order, and there's the miraculous order, which is in use much less frequently, but it's also part of the plan. Okay, it's not a change in the Sidrei Bereshit, in the way God created the world. For example, there's a, if you want to remember a famous Midrash, it says that God made a condition at the time of the creation with the Yamsuf, with the Sea of Reeds, that it would split at the right time when Am Yisrael needed to cross, escaping from Egypt. So that was also part of the plan. It was also part of the creation. So he's kind of expanding on that idea here. But now he's going to go into a polemical mode, and he's going to disagree with who he's going to refer to as a philosoph. Let's see, a philosopher. L'kach ta'a v'lo yada ha-mitpal seif devar ze klal, shim yada devar ze haya lo lahashiv el libo af lefi emunato, ki olam al pi seder shesider oto yidbarach. K'mo chen yesh niflot seder misudar me'ito yidbarach gamken, ve'ein ze shinui b'meh shesidru alav. Okay, so therefore, the philosopher erred. Who is the philosopher here? It is none other than the famous 13th, 14th century French Jewish philosopher, the Ralbag, Rabbi Levi ben Gershon, known in Latin as Gersonides, who the Maharal discusses at length in this introduction to his book here. The Ralbag was considered to be an extreme Aristotelian, more so even than the Rambam. And in because of that, he writes a lot about miracles, and he makes, I don't want to go into his approach in detail, but he makes, in general, we could say, to put it very simply, he tries as much as possible to make the miracle sound less miraculous, to make the miracle seem more natural when he can. Okay, and he develops a whole theory about it. And the Maharal is very unhappy with that. Let's go back now to his polemical comments here. And he says, Okay, therefore, the philosopher made a mistake and didn't understand this at all. Had he understood this, he would have accepted, even according to his own approach, that the world is organized according to God, and so too the miracles are orderly according to God and are not just aberrations. Ki kamosha shemit brach sidro ala teva lefi at siur vamuskal, the same way God organized nature according to a proper organizational plan, kach sidru al devara bilti tivi lefi at siur, also the natural, supernatural miracles were also arranged in a very specific manner. So even the so-called supernatural miracles are really not a change from the plan. They were all planned and organized as part of Maaseh Bereshit. שכשם שראוי שיהיו מתהווים דברים בעולם לפי הטבע, כך ראוי שיהיו מתהווים בעולם דברים בלתי טבעים על ידי פועל הנבדל. The same way, it's appropriate that the world runs according to the laws of nature, it's equally appropriate that God, the פועל הנבדל, the spiritual activator, so to speak, also sometimes runs things in a way that we would call miraculous. אם כן, הדברים אשר הם טבעיים ואשר הם בלתי טבעיים, עניין אחד. There's really no great difference between the so-called natural things and the so-called supernatural things. Again, we pointed out the natural things happen in a sequence which repeats itself all the time, so we get used to it. The supernatural things happen only occasionally, and they're usually only one time, but nonetheless, they're part of the same plan. אשר לא יבין עניין הבלתי טבעי, אומר כי זה חדש יוצא מסדר העולם, ואין הדבר כך כלל. One who doesn't understand this, like the Ralbag, would say that these miracles are a radical change from the way the world has been set up, and it's not true. רק כמו שיש לטבע פועל הטבעי, כך יש לבלתי טבע פועל הנבדל. The same way nature is run by a sort of natural force, so natural laws, so too, the miracles are run by the supernatural actor who is Hashem. But it's really all part of the same big plan. Okay, to summarize, the Maharal is long, okay? The Maharal's main chidush, his main innovation here, is to stress the idea that miracles are not an aberration from the natural way that Hashem set up the world. They are part of that plan. They were also put into effect when the world was created, and they have their own inner dynamic that is completely organized, and we should view them as, in that sense, not as a natural phenomenon, but as a rational phenomenon, so to speak, that they're not, there's nothing bizarre about them when you put them into that perspective. If that seems radical, the Sfat Emet, the second Gera Rebbe, who died in 1905, is going to take this Maharal and take it a step way beyond, I think, even the Maharal would have said. Let's see what he says right away. And this is in Parshat HaChodesh, which deals a lot with the nature of time, the cycle of time. It's, I think, appropriate time for this comment. He says the following really amazing thing. Hinei Maharal katav b'akdamat sefer gvurot Hashem levatel divrei filosofim. כי אין מאמינים שיעשה הקדוש ברוך הוא נס לשנות סדר הטבע. The Maharal, in his introduction to Gvurot Hashem, set out to demolish the theories of the philosophers who don't believe that God would make a change in nature. So they try to explain why it's not really a change, and the Maharal, in his way, explains that it's all planned as part of the plan. Veshivu de kamoshesh seder l'teva, כמו כן יש סדר מיוחד לניסים עיין שם. The Maharal explains there that the same way that nature has its own internal rules, so too miracles. And now the Sfat Emet takes a bold step beyond this and says, ולדעתי נראה עוד, I would go even further. כי אדרבה, the opposite is true. הטבע אין סדר מיוחד, רק לעיני בשר שהם טבעיים. אבל באמת עיקר סדר הוא דרך הניסים והנפלאות שהם מהקדוש ברוך הוא שאינו בדרך הטבע. He turns everything upside down on its head, the opposite of what we would have thought, and says that really nature is unnatural. He'll explain in a minute what he means, but let's just first translate. Nature is unnatural. Nature is the weird phenomenon. Nature is the strange thing here, and it doesn't have a real order, only to our eyes, Lainei Basar, to our physical eyes, who see naturally. So we see nature as being normal, but really that's the bizarre aberration from the creation. But the real Seder, the main way the world is run, is through miracles. Let's go on, let's read that start that last bolded sentence again. Bemet ikar seder hu derech hanisim vaniflaot shem miyakadosh baruch hu she'eino bederech hateva. The world way the world runs is by miracles and wonders that Hashem does. Let's take a step back. I mean, Hashem created the world. Everything in the creation process is certainly miraculous, even though we can explain it scientifically in a lot of different ways or a lot of aspects of it. But someone presumably did something before the Big Bang happened, and everything was done according to God's plan. So it's all miraculous. So he says now, Masebere shicha barabo ateva hup siak tana shetzamin haseder. The idea of Maase Bereshit, the idea that God made natural rules and laws instead of continuing to direct the world openly through his own miraculous intervention every split second, that's the bizarre thing, says the Sfadimet. That's, he says, taking a small step out of the order. God's real order is that he runs everything. He runs every detail. And in Hasidut that the Sfadimet comes from, there's a strong emphasis on God's hashkacha, God's providence being over every tiny detail of everything in the world, which is something the philosophers are much less comfortable with. Okay, but he says here, so therefore we would expect that every single thing that ever happened in history to any individual would be done directly by God at that moment, spontaneously, by, according to what should happen then. But for some reason which we don't understand, it may have to do with the whole nature of the world, that God hides himself in the world, that Elohim becomes hidden in Hateva, or that we live in a world called Olam, from the word Ha'elam, meaning hidden, where the whole point is to be able to reconnect with Hashem. So part of the way, maybe the main way, that he hides himself is by creating nature to sort of speak, do the world work for him, to be his front man, to be the screen that blocks the reality of Hashem in the world. Okay, so he concludes, he says, Shekola bria umashu v'nekudak tana lavin mitoch ze chochmato shel yotzer bereshit. All of the creation is really something to enable us to use it as a way to find out, to rediscover Hashem, find out that Hashem is here. We know that the Midrash talks about how the world was created with the name Shakai, Shin, Dalet, Yud, and the Midrash says that Hashem said, Shedai, it's enough now. The world doesn't have to continue anymore. According to some of the commentators, there's enough world now that people will be able to find me. I think we have Simcha Bunim Apshischa, who we'll quote in a few moments, says that there's enough. The world is enough to find Hashem. We don't need any more than that. Ubeemet, the Sfademet, concludes, B'maase Bereshit HaChochma Nisteret Bli Seder. In Maase Bereshit, God hides his wisdom in a disorderly plan that we call nature. So when you think about it, nature in a lot of sense does have a lot of messy parts. We have tsunamis, and we have floods, and we have earthquakes, and we have COVID-19, and all these things are natural phenomena that don't seem to play according to the rules. So maybe in that sense, the Sfadimet makes sense. When a God does a miracle, it does the job. It works the way it's supposed to do. We got the manna, we crossed the Red Sea, or whatever it is. The sun stood still till Yoshua won his battle in Givon, and then everything goes back to what it was like before. The miracles seem to actually work 100%. Nature seems to get out of whack sometimes. But maybe that's also something the Sfadimet is hinting at. But it's a very radical approach, to counterintuitive entirely, to tell us that really nature is the bizarre part of reality. The miracles is what we should expect. As spiritual people who believe in Hashkachat Hashem and God's providence, we should expect everything to be miraculous. But is that really so? And now we're going to step back and bring in another question here to analyze. I would say, based on the Maharal and even more so the Sfadimet, that we're pretty pro-miracles. I mean, the more bizarre, the better, because it's a greater revelation of Hashem's presence in the world, and we're all in favor of that. That's what we want to do in the world, is reconnect with Hashem. So maybe these miracles are really a good thing. The truth is, it's a big dispute amongst Chazal and the rabbis. Look at this very bizarre Gemara. It's in the Gemara Shabbos in 53b, number 3 on your page. Tan Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a Braita. Masei Belchad Shemeta Ishto V'nicha Bo Linak Ben Linak V'loya Loschar Minika Litain. There was an unfortunate case that a man's wife died, Lo Aleinu, and left a baby boy who needed to nurse, and this man was so poor he couldn't afford to pay a wet nurse. what happens? Maybe it's before they invented Materna. Na selo nes, v'niftechulo dadin kishne dadei isha v'nik et beno. A miracle was done, and his breasts developed like a woman's, and he nursed his son. Okay, everyone agrees. It's a pretty strange story. We're less interested in the story than in the following discussion. Amar of Yosef, bo re'eh kama gadol adam zeh sh'naseh lo nes kazeh. Says Rav Yosef, this guy must be an unbelievable tzaddik. I mean, miracles like this don't happen. If God made a miracle like this for this guy, he must be an unbelievable great tzaddik, that God changed all the normal ways of nature for him. Amar le Abaye responds, his Talmid Abaye responds to him and says, Adrabah, I think the opposite is true. Kama garua adam zeh shenishtanulo sidrei bereshit. What a lowly person he must be, that because of him, God had to change the normal ways of creation, in other words, the laws of nature. Very radical dispute from one extreme to the other. Rav Yosef's position, I think, is obvious. I think that's kind of the intuitive one for us, that, yeah, wow, God did this amazing miracle for this person. He must be on a very high level. He had a lot of merits. Abaye here is the counterintuitive, almost subversive position, who comes along and says, no, you know what? It should have never happened. There's a lot of harbei shluchim lemakom. God has a lot of ways of dealing with the world. He could have easily, first of all, the wife didn't have to die. Second of all, the guy could have had some money to pay for a wet nurse. Third of all, you know, whatever. There are all kinds of ways. Someone could have given him tzedakah to pay for a wet nurse. Someone, you know, someone who gets to such an extreme situation where the only way out is a total radical miracle that requires changing a maaseh bereishit. This is a problematic situation. We shouldn't have to get her. And at this point, we could start to remember back cases where we see in the Tanakh sometimes where there is an emphasis on the miracle needing to have a physical manifestation or a physical way that it can be dressed up. As when Elisha brings oil to the women to bring pots, and you'll get a lot of oil, and all the oils fill up with endlessly with all the pots fill up endlessly with oil, all the vessels. Okay, so God could have just made a vat of oil appear in the middle of the living room. It didn't, But there is clearly an idea that many of the medieval Mefarshim, certainly the more philosophical as opposed to Kabbalistic among them, are inclined to think that Hashem really prefers to not change the laws of nature unless it's a real emergency or there's a really strong point to make. Kriyat Yam Suf, the Makot, of course, are also making a strong educational point to Egypt and to Am Yisrael. Maybe this whole idea of miracles is really a little bit more complicated. And as much as we think they're really cool, maybe it's not always such a good sign if we get to this situation. Let's develop this idea a bit further. Okay. Rav Simcha Bunim Apshischa, who we mentioned earlier and called Simcha, he was a very, very, very important Hasidic Rebbe in Poland in the early 19th century. Part of the second of the Pshischa school, which began a sort of what's usually described as a more rationalistic school, a more elitist school within Polish Hasidus. And he says the following interesting thing about our Gemara. The Seder Torah hu, she neheg alma beteva. The proper order of the Torah is that the world should go according to nature. We'll come back to some minute. He's making here an interesting parallel between the Torah and the world, the way the physical world operates and the way the Torah operates. He'll develop it more clearly in a moment. Nimtza shenisim vaniflaot shem lamala min hateva zo yitzia miseder haTorah. That when Hashem does a miracle, the miracle is in a sense an aberration, not just from the laws of nature, but from the laws of the Torah. Let's just expand on this for a moment. Keep in mind that what he's really saying is that the way the world, now we know the Midrash says that Hashem looked into the Torah, his blueprint, and created the world. So our whole world is supposed to be in sync with the Torah in its deepest and widest sense of what the Torah is. And the Torah is absolutely appropriate for our world as we know it. So therefore, says the Rav Simcha Bunim, that the fact that there are rules of nature in the world, which is part of how Hashem created the world, and there are rules in the Torah, halachot, for example, which is about how Hashem wants Am Yisrael and the nations to operate in the world, all fits together. It's part of the same system, right? There's a system of Torah and there's a system of nature. They're part of a bigger project, let's say, of the way God runs the world. So therefore, the same way, if a person does an Aveira, if a person sins, they're going out of the order that was set up by the Torah, says the Rav Simcha Bunim, and he'll say it a little bit more radically in a moment, that when a miracle occurs, that's also going out of the Torah. The Torah doesn't run by miracles. The Torah runs by normal logic, which is why, for example, we have, of course, the principle in halacha, ein somchin al anes. We don't rely on miracles. The opposite is true. You're not allowed, in most cases, to endanger your life. You know, and certainly not in a way where you would expect a miraculous salvation. We go according to science. We go according to modern medicine, with all of our reservations, obviously. But that's the way the world runs. So he says miracles are, in that sense, a break from the way the Torah runs, the way that God runs the world via the Torah. And this is, so to speak, like, and he's going to now say something quite radical. The same way that if a person does an avera, they do something against the Torah, zo yitzia miseder ha-Torah, they're going out of the order of the Torah. And he's saying here something, a deep idea about mitzvot and averot. Mitzvot and averot, it's primarily a question of, am I fulfilling Hashem's will or am I violating Hashem's will? But in addition, it has to do with, am I sticking in or leaving the proper order for a human being, or the proper order for a Jewish person, the proper order for a guy, for a woman, for a Kohen, a Levi, whatever the case might be, okay? When I violate the Torah, I'm out of sync with the proper rhythm of the world, the way Hashem set it up for me, okay? In that sense, he says, and now you can start to hear the radical message that's on the way, when a person does an Aveira, that's kind of like a miracle in the sense that, counterintuitively, they're both violations of the norm of the way Hashem set up the world. Okay. Ein chato rak shiotzei miseder haTorah. Ein chato rak shiotzei miseder haTorah. What is the chait? The definition of chait is leaving the order of the Torah. Shatorah gozeret kisidra. The Torah obligates us in or legislates a certain order. Shelo laso davar zeh. Not to be mechal Shabbos, not to eat treif. And a person does that, they're breaking out of the supernatural, natural order of reality. And this, in fact, is really true. Now, he's going to give an example from halacha, and then he's going to work it back to miracles. Are there cases where we're allowed to violate the Torah, normal order? Well, yeah, everyone knows. Pikuach nefesh docha Shabbat. One is allowed to, and not only allowed to, obligated to violate Shabbat or any other mitzvah almost, to save a life, okay? Well-known, very well-known halachic principle. So he says, Matzinu sheseder hu shelo lechalel et haShabbat. We've seen that part of the order of the Torah is to keep Shabbat. V'chilolu yitziyah min haSeder. And someone who violates Shabbos is going out of the Seder the Torah decreed. Ach lepikuach nefesh min Yisrael, tzavta haTorah lechalel. However, to save a life, the Torah itself commands us to violate Shabbat or other mitzvot in order to save a life. V'zehu seder haTorah. That is the order of the Torah. In other words, when we let's take a happy example. When we drive a woman to the hospital on Shabbos to give birth, okay, which is considered pikuach nefesh, and we're obligated to do that if she doesn't want to have a home birth, okay, so then we are not violating Shabbat. That that drive is legislated as part of the laws of Shabbat. Right? It's built in. It's not a loophole. It's built into the laws. I have a simanim in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchot Shabbat that talk about in what cases you can and must violate Shabbat and how to do it. And so that's part of the system. As much as it's part of the system of Shabbat is not to cook on Shabbat, it's equally part of the system is to cook on Shabbat for a sick, seriously ill person who needs food. So it's part of the same system. So this is not in any way a violation. So if I drive to the movie theater on Shabbos, so then I'm violating the order of the Torah. If I drive to the hospital on Shabbos, then I am keeping the order of the Torah. Im kein, he concludes, Kevan sha'asa kodesh baruch hu nisim bishvil Yisrael, zeu seder ha-Torah. Since Hashem made the miracles, why does Hashem make almost all the miracles that we find in the Torah? To save Am Yisrael, to save us from the Egyptians, save us from the Greeks, save us from this one or that one, or to give us food in the desert, to give us water in the desert, whatever they are. They're types of salvations. Salvations are, right? One is allowed to, one is obligated to violate the Torah for pikuach nefesh. Okay, we know that Hashem keeps all the mitzvot, Chazal tell us. So Hashem has to keep all the Torah, but Hashem is also allowed to violate the Torah to save a life. Yeah. So when Hashem does a miracle like Kriyas Yamsuf or taking us out of Egypt or saving us from Haman and Chashverosh, and he does miracles, well, some of those are hidden miracles that aren't changing nature, but let's stick with leaving Egypt. And Kriyas Yamsuf is a classic example of the supernatural miracle. So says Rav Simcha Bonim, really, it's kind of a vera to do that, because you're really not supposed to make miracles. The same way you're not supposed to change the order of the Torah by violating the halacha, you're also not supposed to violate the order of the Torah by changing nature. So why does Hashem do that? We would expect Hashem to keep the Torah. He says, oh, it's okay, because he does it for pikuach nefesh, and pikuach nefesh docha Shabbat, or whatever it may be. So also pikuach nefesh is also docha, the importance of keeping natural laws, and Hashem is allowed to do the occasional miracle in order to save us. So you can breathe a sigh of relief here. Hashem is off the hook. He's allowed to do miracles. Okay. The Ramban, Nachmanides, late 13th century, starting in Spain and ending up in Yerushalayim. And the Ramban, and this is the last, a part of a very, very long comment to the last pasuk in Parshat Bo, which is sort of summing up the Exodus, okay? And he here, this is a very famous piece that he talks about the nature of miracles. And here he brings up a topic that we've touched on so far, but we haven't really addressed it directly, which are open and hidden miracles and the relationship between the two. Says the Ramban in a beautiful opening statement. Umin anisim gedolim va'mefursamim adam mode benisim anisterim shehem yisod Torah kula. From the great and famous miracles like Kriyat Yamsuf and Hanukkah and Purim and the manna and the sun standing still, because of these great miracles, our consciousness is raised to understand that we live in a miraculous world, and then we admit that there are also, we are cognizant of, we recognize and we admit that there are also hidden miracles. And those hidden miracles, he says, are the basic foundation of the whole Torah. The basic of emunah is to believe that everything that happens is hashkacha pratit, is God's will, and therefore, in a sense, everything is miraculous. Even the little things that we don't see all the time are also miraculous. And certainly there are miracles that happen. The Purim, so let's leave Hanukkah till the end. The Purim story is all a hidden miracle. In fact, Ahasuerus fell in love with Esther and he got mad at Haman and on. It's right. There's nothing there. God's name isn't even mentioned in the Megillah. It's all completely hidden, but we all know it's one of the greatest miracles ever. Right? And we know that because we know the concept of miracles because we see them in the Torah and great dramatic ones like Kriyat Yom Suf. A person is not really part of the Torah unless he believes that everything is miraculous, bein b'rabim, bein b'yachid, whether it's done for the all of the collective or for an individual. Elam miyasa hamitzvot yetzlichenu scharo v'miyavor aleihem yachritenu onsho. If a person does good things, Hashem will reward him. If he does bad things, Hashem will punish him. And this is all miraculous. This is all hashkacha pratit. That's not built into nature. Hakol begezerat elyon kasher yizkarti kvar. All of this is, as I've mentioned before, a divine decree. V'yitparsamu anisim anistarim binyan rabim. And we see that the hidden miracles become very obvious and well known when the Torah talks about the brachot and the klalot, God's promises to us of good things or chas v'shalom negative things if we don't behave properly. Like it says in Devarim, v'amru kol goyim amasa Hashem kacha le'aretz hazot. The goyim will say, the nation of the world can see, they'll say, why did Hashem do that to Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is because those people left their covenant with God. So not only the Jews, but all the nations are become sensitized to the miraculous nature of all of reality. That even the nations will see that the Jews are being punished. It's, of course, a very risky thing. I don't want to get into it now, but it just popped into my head that we know that after the Holocaust, Rav Soloveitchik writes about it quite a bit in Kol Dodi Dofek and other places, that after the Holocaust, Christian missionaries were saying to Jews, well, you see Hashem punished you so badly, obviously we're right, and he doesn't consider you his chosen people anymore. And Rav Soloveitchik says that as soon as Israel was established, that was the end of that discussion. It was just a table because it was everything turned around. But so it's a double-edged sword here, but it's a very interesting point. And he concludes, Vamar b'kiyum v'ru'u kalamei arts kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'ru'u mimecha. And it also says that at the end of that pasuk, all the people of the world will see that God's name is called upon you and they'll be in awe of you. So it really also, again, works in a positive way as well, as Rav Hashem. And I will explain this more later on. Okay, so what has the Ramban added to our discussion so far? His big chidush here, his big innovation, is that the purpose, or at least one of the purposes, for great miracles, and Simcha Burim said the great miracles are justified as pikuach nefesh. The Ramban maybe thinks that God could have saved us every time in a more natural way, but we need open miracles for the educational purpose of sensitizing us to the miraculous nature of all of reality, to the hidden miracles as well. Let's go on. Rav Hutner, the Pachad Yitzchak, the was a Talmud of Rav Kook, and then he was in America, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, then came back to Israel. And he says, and this is in Hanukkah, this piece on Hanukkah. So here he's dealing with starting to bring things back to Hanukkah. It says, Divrei Ramban, Shemina Nisima Gluyim Anu Lomdim Ala Nisima Nistarim, the words of the Ramban, that through open miracles, we learn about hidden miracles, Shekola teva hu nisim nistrim, that all of nature is a hidden miracle. I think so far pretty much everyone that we've talked about, except maybe the Ralbag, would have agreed with this. Chukei teva einam. He's going to basically now take the Ramban's idea and he's just going to say it in such a beautiful metaphor that I can't resist it, and it also leads us into Hanukkah. Chukei teva einam ela hagbalot. What is nature? Nature are limitations on the normal. Nature is Elohim, we said, Hateva, which is in the Kabbalistic terms, the sphere of the spirit. It's Gvura, it's limitations, okay? Right? Chesed expands endlessly, and then we need to have divisions and limitations and definitions, and that's called Gvura, and that's called nature. Chukei Hateva einam ela hagbalot, they limit the miraculous nature of reality. Vagbalota elu b'mahutam umdod hen b'stira, Lotoa or harishoni shaya hatchala lebriyat olam. These limitations are in contradistinction to the hidden light from the beginning of creation. Remember, in the beginning of the creation, there's light before the sun, the moon, and the stars are created, and God hides it away for the tzadikim latid lavo. Okay, where does he hide it? Okay, there are a lot of different theories. The Baal Shem Tov says he hides it in the Torah. It's between the lines. Rav Wittner is describing in a sense, he's imagining it in a more literal way. It's as though we're in a room, the world is a big room, and there's a screen, there's a mechitza on one side, and all the primordial light is on the other side of this mechitza, and it's a very high mechitza. So we can't see it at all, but it's right there. It's on the other side. It's in the world, but it's hidden. Okay? Umasha nachnu korim nes, umasha nu korim teva, what we call miracle or nature, einam ela shnei ofanim bepulato shel ha'or rishoni hazeh. There are two different ways that that primordial light is revealed. Ha'ofen echad bezman shenaseh nekev kichudo shel machat, ota geniza vaz mimela batel chok hateva mikrait ze etzlein hu etzleinu nes. Normally, nature is when that curtain, that mechitza, is up and we can't see the light. But what happens when the nes occurs? A tiny pinprick is made in that curtain, and then a beam of light shines through, a beam of primordial light that's been hidden away for the tzaddikim latid lavo, shines into our reality and illuminates our whole reality in a different way of looking at things, a different perspective, a miraculous perspective. He says that is what we call a nes. Petichata genizahu nes ilu etzema genizahu teva. The normal state of affairs of the hiddenness of the primordial light is nature. And when there's a tiny pinprick that lets a beam of primordial light into the world, that's what we call a miracle. Beautiful, beautiful statement. I want to leave time for questions, so I'm going to skip the Mei Marom and go to the final Maharal. Okay? The Maharal now, and now from his book Ner Mitzvah, which is his book about Hanukkah. Okay? Okay, we've only hinted at Hanukkah. Let's just remind ourselves before we read it, two things, okay, or one or two things about Hanukkah. Let's just remember the most important thing that we're dealing with. What are the miracles of Hanukkah? We have the miracle of the military victory, which comes first, which is the miracle of Hatzalah, the miracle that Am Yisrael are saved in. It's a very, very obviously crucial miracle. Without that, we would have ceased presumably to exist as a people and assimilated into Hellenistic culture, Chas v'Shalom. So that, and that was a miracle, as we say in Al HaNisim, of the small against the great and the weak against the strong, and et cetera, et cetera. And nonetheless, against all odds, we won that victory. So that's a huge miracle. Okay, then we come to try to clean up the Beit HaMikdash, and what do we find? That there's not enough pure oil for to light the menorah. There's only one little vial of oil with the Kohen Gadol's seal on it. And God makes a miracle that the oil burns for 8 days. However you interpret how that happened, if they divided it into eight or they put it into one, whatever it is, it lasted until they could make more. Now we know that halachically this miracle, which is very beautiful and very sweet and very inspiring, is halachically absolutely unnecessary. So we have a principle called tuma hutra b'tzibur. If the whole community is tameh, or if the objects are all tameh, then you can do things when you're impure. You could use impure oil. And even if you couldn't, We have a principle in halacha rachmana onus rachmana patre. If you can't do a mitzvah, so you're exempt. Okay. So this second miracle, and we know, and we look in the Tfilot and in the Gemara and in the Rambam, and there's different parshanim, different commentators emphasize one over the other. There's a certain tension between them, which is the more important, the physical miracle, the spiritual miracle, the natural miracle, the supernatural miracle, right? There's a lot of to say about the relationship between the two. What does the Maharal do with this? Says the Maharal, She'ikar masha kavu yamei Chanukah bishvil shayu minatzchim et hayivanim. The main miracle that led us to make, that led Chazal to create a holiday, was the victory over the Greeks. That was the important miracle. Rak shelo haya nireh shaya kan nitzachon hazeh al yedei nation haaseh zeh Hashem itbarach velo haya zeh mikocham ugvuratam. Says the Maharal, unbelievable thing. He said, no one realized it was a miracle. They were all saying, kochi va'otzem yadi asal yirachayel hazeh. We did it. we knew the terrain, and we had guerrilla warfare, and we were lighter, and we had special tactics, and they were bogged down with their elephants, and on and on and on. All the reasons in the world to explain it naturally, when kind of pops in your head right away, the Six-Day War, that everyone can make a million explanations why everything is natural, and anyone who has a drop of amunah knows that it's a huge nace, right? But you could explain everything. So Hanukkah also, they were explaining everything. They didn't realize that God had made this unbelievable nace for them. Lefikach nasa nace al yidei neroda haminorah shiedu shekolaya b'nace min Hashem yitbarach. So Hashem says, "Wow, I've got to wake these people up. They don't get it. They don't remember that Ramban, that from the Nisim Gluyim, you appreciate Nisim Nistarim. I'll have to make them another Nes Galui." So he made a Nes Galui of Nes Pach HaShemen, which was totally unnecessary, so to speak. A little tiny, sweet, lichtiga, right, miracle. And everyone said, "Wow, that's for sure a miracle, because the oil can't last for 8 days." And then that miracle of the oil illuminated back on the military victory, which had happened earlier. And everyone said, "You know what? That was also a miracle. If the candles could be lit by a miracle, that means that Hashem is here and Hashem is involved and Hashem is running the show." And they realized that the military victory was also a miracle. Dafka Nes Zena Seki Ika Rishada Yevanim Shatimu at Ahechal, and says Enzimaro, why did Hashem do Nes Pach HaShem? He could have done anything, you know, to wake them up. Because in addition to everything we said, the menorah also symbolizes the light of the Torah and the wisdom of the Torah. And that's why the light is the appropriate metaphor for the miracle, which comes to show our victory over the darkness of Hellenistic culture, which the Greeks wanted to bring to us. So basically, it comes out that we do have two miracles on Hanukkah. They're very, very different. The main one, says Zamaral, is the military victory. And we needed this very special one, which, keep in mind, the Rambam calls the lighting of the Hanukkah candles mitzvah chavivah hi ad ma'od, a very, very beloved mitzvah. It's a mitzvah d'rabbanan that we do mahadrin mina mahadrin. All of Am Yisrael does the most strictest way. And we're here in Eretz Yisrael. Many of us light our Hanukkah outside again, like in the time of Chazal. And we're very careful about the time. And we take it very, very seriously, right? And because it's very, very beloved, because Hashem made out of his great love for us this little miracle, which led to this great revelation of the miraculous nature of Amunah. I just want to end with one more thing, and then I'll open up for questions, which is not directly related, but it's, I want to like to close with this idea. Okay, we have two mitzvahs on Hanukkah, the candles at night and challel in the morning. Those are the two. And these are only two mitzvot. Every day we have many minagim. These are the two mitzvot. They're two very, very little mitzvot. I mean, lighting Hanukkah candles at night could take a couple of minutes, saying halal. I don't want to say how people daven in shul sometimes, right? But sometimes could be pretty fast also, halal. Okay? And then in the middle, you go to work. You go to school. You go to all your Zoom meetings, right? Because it's a regular day. It's not a yantif. The Mishnah Berurah says, don't make it a yantif. You're supposed to go to work. It's a regular day. But you have this little mitzvah in the morning, this little mitzvah in the evening. And I think what it teaches us is that we have big dramatic holidays like Pesach and Shabbos, and you know, where there are huge numbers of halachot, and we have meals, and we have Yisro Malach, and we do all this stuff, and it's a big blast of Amunah, a big chizuk in Amunah. Hanukkah teaches us that a very, very small thing, like a little tiny miracle, can illuminate a big miracle. So little tiny mitzvahs, a few minutes of lighting a candle with kavana at night, a few minutes of with zmiros, a few minutes of halel in the morning, done with kavana. During the day I do my regular stuff, but it's all different. I'm doing it now through Hanukkah eyes. Everything's been illuminated in a new light. And that's the beauty of Hanukkah, that something so little can become so beloved. Mitzvah chavivah ad ma'od. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And it's nice, you know, it's here I have sort of a, on the philosophical side. Yesterday, Rabbi Liebtag spoke very much on the historical side. In the 15 minutes or so, we're going to hear from Shuli Mishkan on the archaeological side. And I think it's one thing we have not done that many classes, like philosophically here. So Yasher Koach on that. And the Maharal is, you know, always, what can I say? He has had a great influence, although I think many people are very unfamiliar with his work. I think maybe in Israel, he's more popular than here. I think you can graduate, you know, 12 years of yeshiva day school and 2 years in yeshiva in Israel and, you know, and never hear a word of the Maharal. But, and then in certain circles, he has a lot of influence, I think. But, okay, would you like me to feed you the questions or do you want to read the questions on the chat box? There are just a few. Is it easier if I tell you the questions or you just want to read them?
No, you read them.
Okay, that's okay. All right, so the first question from iPad. How can you call a one-time event? It's very hard to say it's built into nature. If it's built into nature, there's got to be a way we can have a predictive feature that it can happen again, not dependent on Moshe being there. And if you're going to say that, then it isn't nature. Then it has to be a miracle.
So I think I assume the question that whoever iPad is asking is about the Maharal's opinion that we did in the beginning, that the nature also has an organizational pattern. I think you're right. And again, in the sense that if we look at it from a scientific perspective, then obviously something that happens one time, it's hard to say it has an order. It reminded me, there's a famous principle in halakha that the Rambam brings in, the Shach quotes it in Yoredeya, that things which happen extremely infrequently don't have minhagim. You can't say the minhag is to do something when it's something that doesn't usually happen. So in that sense, the miracle as well. But I think only in the Maharal's perspective, which is very Maharalian, for lack of a better word, of the nature of two parallel realities of a physical reality and a spiritual reality, and his belief that the spiritual reality also, by definition, has to have some sort of an orderly aspect to it. So even though, let's say, the miracle happens only once in the world, so we perceive it in that way, but that somehow if we would be transported to the other side of the curtain and see the world in that sense, then I think we would see how it does fit in. Maybe it's a seder of miracles. All the miracles that are going to happen throughout history are all lined up in a row, and they're the organization, even though they only occur once each or something like that. But
okay. All right. Steve is asking, and it's sort of the 180 degrees from what you said at the end, how the rabbis were uncomfortable. You know, we're uncomfortable having a miracle about military victory. We don't like that. So either some will say they invented the story of the oil came, however happened, but the holiday got converted much later. As we know, the oil is not mentioned in the earlier sources, and you discuss, you know, the uncomfortability of the rabbis with that. Of course, at the end, the Maharal, you're saying the Maharal says the exact opposite. The rabbis want the miracle to be only about the military, but that couldn't work, so they needed the oil. So that's kind of interesting if you want to comment on that.
Obviously, the Sefer Maccabim doesn't have the Nespach Hashem, and it comes for the first time in that Brayta in the Gemara. And obviously, there's not, I don't think, yet found historical evidence for it. Yeah, it does seem that the Rabbanim, look, we could talk about this a lot. We could talk about why there's not a Seder, why there's not a Masechet Chanukah in the Mishnayos. There's a lot that could be said about this topic, and a lot has been said about it. We'll say, for the point of balance and vote, since Rabbi Kelman says that Maharal is not so well known in your circles, the Maharal, without going into it more, he definitely has a certain, this may be too strong of a word, a militaristic bent, but he does not downplay warfare in certain other topics. I don't have time to get into it, but we'll leave it at that for now. But obviously the tension is there. I look at things, my way of working is we have them both. We have all these traditions, so I'm trying to look at the whole picture with all the components.
Okay, Linda just points out, I guess, you know, we're in the COVID time, and today I believe the vaccine is rolling out in the United States today, I believe, and tomorrow in Canada. That's the miracle of tapping into nature when we need it. The miracle of getting a vaccine in a record time in world history, you know, by tenfold. We've never had a vaccine that fast. Also, you know, it really has to do with, I guess, our perspective on what a miracle is. You know, how do we view nature? And that's what the Moro is trying to say. And it's just, it's not easy, perhaps. Living in the scientific world is very hard to see nature as a miracle, I would say. It's become harder in the modern world.
Mm-hmm. I think that also, well, first of all, in terms of that, I would hope, I hope and pray that, and bless everyone, that this vaccine will be effective and safe. It's the latter part we may not know for a long time, and Bezrat Hashem, everyone should be very, very healthy very soon and very safe. I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay, fine. Okay, and I'll just, DJ, yes, you know, if anybody would like to, any more information on the National Library, this is just a side share, you know, Rabbi Leshem's sort of expertise is dealing with the collection and all, you know, all the tons of information they have at the library. And we had a while back, Yoel Finkelman spoke from the National Library going through some of the displays they have. And please God, in the future, we'll have that. So, you know, be in contact. You can look at the National Library's website or be in contact with me. I can forward it or DJ, who just left his email on in the chat box. Okay, somebody's saying to me privately, I hope they don't mind if I sort of repeated a little bit, that the reason, interesting, they said the Gaon of Vilna and the Maharal are not studying so much, as I guess they were, I think what they're saying is they're two independent thinkers. They don't go with the flow and they sort of break molds, and maybe the traditional community didn't want to accept some of the teachings. I think that the Maharal and the Vilna Gaon, if you want to comment on that. They're two out of the box.
Well, the Maharal had great influence on many of the streams of modern Jewish thought today. He influenced the Hasidim. He influenced the Vilna Gaon. He influenced the Musar movement. And he had a great influence on Rav Kook. So, and that's many of the streams of Jewish philosophy or Jewish thought that are very powerful today all owe a lot to the Maharal.
Yeah, of course. The Chassidut have tremendous amount, right? Just the average person, I guess, is not so versed. Okay.
The Maharal is also hard.
Yes.
It's long, and you have to learn kind of his own, his sort of unique personal language. It's daunting.
But and if you do, you can then build a golem at the end.
That was a joke. Maharal talks about that. That will be a great discovery.
That's the Schneer Lyman famous, you know, talk on the, you know, that the invention of the golem in the 20th century. Anyways, okay. Anybody want to ask any questions and unmute themselves? That would, okay. Otherwise, we'll say thank you very much. A pleasure. Yeah.